Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Let's be honest. We all used our smartphones a lot in the past 15 months. A lot. In some cases, they were a lifeline to family and friends. In other cases, they were evil little rectangles sucking our life source and lulling us into endless doom scrolling. As we ease back into a more normal daily existence, maybe it is a good time to rethink your relationship with your phone. My next guest argues that we should think about using our phones a lot less. His name is Paul Greenberg, and you might know him through his bestseller, a James Beard Award-winning book, Four Fish, which came out in 2010. He's written six books exploring the natural world and humans' relationships and connections to it. And in a recent book, he turned his investigative eye on himself and his own habits. In a book titled Goodbye Phone, Hello World, 65 Ways to Disconnect from Tech and Reconnect to Joy, Greenberg describes what it was like for him to stop using a smartphone and why you might want to consider doing so as well. He writes the average person spends just under 4 hours a day, 1,400 hours a year, on their phone, and looks at the myriad ways we could instead be spending our time. Greenberg also argues that our conscious minds are a precious commodity, one that he says has been exploited. And speaking of our minds, he makes the case that devices distract us from important downtime and daydreaming and opportunities for living our life in real life. And he walks the walk. Paul Greenberg now uses a flip phone. And he joins me. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Allison. Great to be here.
And Paul and I know each other from the Wayback Machine.
We do.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Have you come up with ways to spend less time on screens? Any flip phone users out there? Or maybe you never had a phone to begin with? Or maybe you're someone who has a question for Paul about his experience? We want to hear from you. Give us a call. 646-435-7280. That's 646-435-7280. Or you can always tweet to us at @allofitwnyc. So like a lot of us, we start to think about our own habits, Paul, when our kids ask for a phone. And that is where your book starts. Would you read a few pages for us?
Sure, no problem. So here, this is how it starts. My son was born in 2006. The iPhone was born in 2007. They have been competing for my attention ever since. I always knew it was wrong to steal a moment to look at my phone instead of my son, but I thought I had plenty of moments, and then my son was 12. My time as the father of a small child had come to an end. What had I given my device that I could have given to my son? Like the average American, just under 4 hours a day, every day, 2 months out of every year, 2 years out of the dozen my son had been alive, gone. And now my son was 12. He told me it was time he got his own phone. Most of his friends already had one. 89% of the 40 million adolescents already do. Was there anything I could say? Is every child now required to forfeit those same hours, months, and years? More, actually. Teens now spend on average more than 7 hours out of every day on their devices, nearly the sum of their entire time outside of school. I researched, I reflected, I despaired. I learned that my phone is not there for my amusement or my son's education. It's there for our marketable distraction. Its purpose and our purposes are at odds. I learned that the bank account of my time, which my device had drained over the last decade, was the currency of something that had come to be called the attention economy, a system of commerce that draws its profits by laying claim to our focus and selling it on the open market. Of course, people have always been there trying to use our time for their profit. The newspapers that sold advertising took a few minutes a day from the people in the 1800s. Radio in the 1920s and 30s took a few more. Television in the 50s, 60s, and 70s and 80s, still more. Our minds and media have always been a little like host and virus. The host tries to resist invasion. The virus adapts to penetrate the host's defenses. The host adapts again and resists the new infection. The virus adapts again and penetrates. There's something new now, the virus wants to take over the host entirely. Today, a smartphone brings the moment merchants pass all our defenses into every second of our waking lives. Every tick of the clock can be sold, every minute can be bundled and shopped to a third party. And the power of the moment merchants has grown apace. The CEOs of the largest attention economy companies have amassed fortunes comparable to those of the pharaohs of Egypt, pyramids of unfathomable wealth built out of the bricks of our consciousness. The next time my son asked me about getting his own phone, I tried to tell him this. I wanted to see his thoughts as precious, private. I wanted him to keep his time for himself. If the phone is so bad, he asks, why are you always on it?
That was Paul Greenberg reading from his book, Goodbye Phone, Hello World. What was your first step towards defoning?
Well, you know, I realized I did have to, as you say, walk the walk. And, you know, a lot of parents and kids get into these fights about it. You know, the parents say, get off the phone, and then they get on the phone. And, you know, it just goes around and around in a loop. So I realized I actually needed to do something. So I actually marched over to the T-Mobile store, turned in my iPhone, and got a flip phone. And that was a good 2 years ago now, and I've been on it ever since. So, you know, cutting the cord has been a really big step for me.
What was the hardest part that first week?
I think, you know, I was always reaching in my pocket to verify things or to check things, to fill those empty moments that I realized boredom, you know, was upon me, and I was trying to attack that boredom with my phone, and now I couldn't do it anymore. So I actually had to kind of feel the boredom and actually to go past the boredom. That was pretty tricky. There were, of course, logistical problems. You know, I stopped using Google Maps. But, you know, it's funny, that actually had a great appeal because, do you remember, like, I mean, as you say, we're coevals back. I remember you on the radio back in the 80s. But you remember a time before, you know, you had this device that told you how to get somewhere. Do you remember that feeling when you got to the place and you figured it out? Do you remember that little moment of accomplishment? You know, where you sort of pat yourself on the back?
Oh, I love a map. I'm a big map fan.
I mean, it's just, and you realize that there are all these little moments that we as humans, be it getting somewhere, finding something out, that buoyed us up and made us feel like we were actually doing something with our lives. And the iPhone takes all of that away. And so getting that sense of finding my way, getting lost a little bit, was actually kind of enjoyable after a while.
We have some fellow flip phone users on the line. Let's go to David on line 5. Hi, David. Thanks for calling All of It.
Oh, hey. I guess that's me.
That's you.
I'm calling you from a flip phone. I've never had a smartphone. I don't want to get a smartphone. However, it becomes more and more difficult over the years to get along without one, and also to deal with the pushback that I get from society. I mean, friends, colleagues, you know, whether it be called a Luddite or to be sort of, laughed at. I constantly fight feelings of inadequacy and insecurity about that. I have this flip phone. You know, you pull it out, and it's almost like I feel the need to apologize for it, which is kind of ridiculous. My workplace, you know, there's a smartphone app that you're supposed to, download and use to demonstrate that you are able to enter the campus. I work for a college, you know, so if I go to the campus, there's something called Everbridge that you download and you have to use it to answer questions like, have you been out of the country for 14 days? have you been experiencing any fever or any of that? So I had to get a special dispensation, you know, for someone without a smartphone in order to get to the campus. And it was sort of like an eye roll and like I was making work for people. You know, it's like, oh, he doesn't have a smartphone, so we have to accommodate him. You know, we have to send him a link to a website so that he can fill that out from his laptop because, you know, and then I have to carry the laptop with me to campus so I can show the
security. Totally know that experience. And, you know, I found, I don't know, Allison, if you had this experience, but, you know, since the pandemic, you can't get a menu. You have to scan this code. And you know what I've taken to be doing lately is that when the waiter comes up and, you know, I ask, is there a paper menu? Sometimes not. If there isn't, I say to the waiter, what's good? And bring me something good. And it's kind of this very human moment. And we both laugh about how ridiculous it is that our only recourse is a QR code.
Let's go to Daniel on line 4. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. You have some very interesting ideas about if you're going to keep your smartphone, what you can do. Share your thoughts with us.
Yeah, no, I just came up with this, and I think I might have read about it about a year ago and knew that some friends were doing it. But I found, I'm a Apple iPhone user, if you just simply turn off the color on your phone, you can go into the accessibility panel and make your phone grayscale. I just found that the phone's a lot less stimulating. I'm spending a lot less time on it. I'm only doing more essential things like using it for phone calls and emails, really keeping me off Instagram. And I also heard that if it's in black and white, it might actually be less stimulating for your brain. It's producing less dopamine. And certainly I know that it's sort of getting rid of those annoying little red buttons that sort of notify you when there's something to check out on the app. When it's black and white, you can't see that and just kind of spend less time doing unessential things on the phone. I really like it.
Daniel, great advice.
Yeah, and you know, that's actually one of the things I do recommend in Goodbye Phone, Hello World. And it's a great thing. There are lots of things you can do, actually. You know, if you really want to go radical, but you want to keep your iPhone, you actually can just cancel your data plan and only use it for data when you're on Wi-Fi. So you can still have a phone, you can still text, but you don't have to be slave to that whole system. I mean, other things you can do, personally, one of the things has been the biggest break for me is to shut my phone down all the way at night. You know, or I don't have an iPhone anymore, but this is what I have been telling people, and this is what people have been responding to. Shut your iPhone down all the way at night. And when you wake up in the morning, you know, use an alarm clock. Don't use your phone to wake you up, because if you use your phone as your alarm clock, that's the first thing you're going to start doing is scrolling, which is what we want to avoid first thing in the morning.
You reference a wide range of texts in your book, Goodbye Phone, Hello World, and offer endnotes. And towards the beginning of the book, you write, the most helpful piece of wisdom I found were buried in books so long the phone-distracted individual would never get through them. What is the science behind you? We have, you know, we're big readers on this show. We have a book club. What is the science behind actually reading something in real life, having it in your hands, paper, versus reading it on a screen?
Well, there's a lot of science. I mean, it's pretty impressive when you look at it. There's actually been some research that shows people who read books, physical books, live 2 years longer. Now, you know, that's out there, but it is research, and it has been, you know, does have some data behind it. But other things that generally when I was speaking with one of the people I spoke with was this, you know, considered one of the great experts on reading in the country, and he was saying that people, when you look at the data, when they're reading online, they're skimming. And they're not really reading, and they don't retain the degree of reading comprehension that they do when they're reading on paper. And I think a large part of it is just because when your brain is given choices, you know, whether, you know, you've got your text that you're trying to focus on, but you've got all these other things going on, you're not really truly paying attention, and so a lot of slipping through. So I personally, you know, have greatly, greatly enjoyed going back to reading on paper. It's been, I think I've become a smarter, better person as a result. I mean, it's a pretty large claim, but I think it's true.
My guest is Paul Greenberg. He's the author of Goodbye Phone, Hello World. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Have you come up with some ways to spend less time on screens? Maybe you're a flip phone user. We've got a couple holding on lines. Or maybe you never had one to begin with. Or maybe you have a question for Paul about his experience. I want to get to Mark, who has a different perspective. He's on line 9. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling in.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. Now, your smartphone is important to you.
It is very important to me, and I've gone through many iPhones to get to the one I have now, and there are some very useful things that I do with my phone as a musician, and I don't lose any connectivity with friends and family. I do a lot of reading. I do a lot of music. I collect media for my musical work. And my iPhone actually connects to my brand new keyboard, which is a Yamaha PSR-SX900, where I can record directly and save it as a file and play along with it. So that's very handy as well.
Thank you for calling in, Mark. Paul, he makes such an interesting point. Is, you know, for a lot of people, the phone is part of their livelihood.
It can be. You know, what I object to is the way that the phone is this kind of free market for everybody to get a piece of your attention. And while you cannot deny the incredible power of an iPhone, you know, to do things like music composition and all the kind of things that Mark was mentioning, it's amazing. But what's the problem is all of these different ways that the phone can intrude on you with beeps and whistles. You know, as the previous caller was talking about, like the mandatory nature of having some kind of app to allow you to access the campus, a lot of this is just not necessary. You know, there's a move these days towards something called digital humanism that respects people's focus and attention and consciousness. And, you know, frankly, I would much rather have a phone situation where some of these apps that are free become paid as if they don't sell your data and they don't invite you to, you know, endlessly search out more apps and new add-ons and things like that. This is the way that I think we need to reimagine the digital environment if we're to retain our focus and be able to be, you know, really conscious and connected human beings.
Let's go to Michael on line three, who needs some flip phone advice, Paul. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air with Paul Greenberg.
Thank you so much, Allison. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thanks for coming.
You know, I'm one of the 2% of millennials, I'm age 30, who's never owned a smartphone. I remember when they came out in high school and Steve Jobs got on YouTube and everyone thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. But, you know, I refuse to get a smartphone. I enjoy reading books. I know that, you know, my nose would be buried in the screen. The thing I'd like to know is for people, for younger people who rely so much on the technology, how do they stop being a screenager and get back to living out there in the world? See, it's easy for me to do this now because I work in civil service. Mm-hmm. But before, when I worked as an actor, I needed something to tell me, hey, rehearsal's canceled, don't bother coming to this section of the city or take a different subway because we're meeting someplace else. And I've missed opportunities by not having a smartphone. So how does a young person make the transition?
Well, you know, some people may just not be able to do it fully, but I do believe that there is room in everybody's life for digital sabbaticals digital Sabbaths. So at the very least, one day of your week should be phone-free. And I think you also should block off portions of your day and make them phone-free. One of the things I talk about in Goodbye Phone, Hello World is that there are some countries, like France, has the droit de déconnexion, the right to disconnect, is written into French law so that employees of companies above a certain number of employees have the right to turn off their phone and to turn off their email and not respond. And you actually can get in trouble as an employer for contacting people via phone or via email during those hours. So that's, I think, the first step for people like that. Different people have taken shots at this. Approach another author suggested was basically emptying your phone of all the apps except perhaps, you know, the two or three that you need. You know, truly need maybe your Maps app or something like that, and then go for a month like that, and then gradually add back in the apps that. There are different strategies to do it, but I think the biggest thing is cutting the hermetic world between your phone and your computer, so that, you know, in the present state, these millennials are forever in this bubble of digitalism. You have to burst the bubble and allow for some real reality to break through.
When you're thinking about, you know, somebody's thinking about this, but you're not talking about getting rid of apps that do things like track diabetes or anything like that, right? You're talking about the stuff that really is A, a mind suck, and B, we've been almost tricked into wanting.
Yes. Yes, and like, you know, definitely get rid of all the social media on your apps. I actually dumped Facebook altogether, you know, for partially for political reasons, but just, you know, it was just too harassing as an app. Mm-hmm. But getting rid of all this social media stuff, I actually think getting rid of all your news apps is a pretty good idea. You know, the idea that these, you know, I remember a good friend of mine, very intelligent, smart movie producer, was like, I'm sorry I didn't get back to you, but I'm sorry, I just have to respond to all these news alerts. I'm like, why do you have to respond to a news alert? Like, you know, this idea that the news calls out to you to bring you in is to me completely absurd. It's a little bit like bottled water in the sense, like, who decided that you put water in a bottle and sell it to you? So I think that those are, you know, really the key distractors. I mean, we spend something like 173 million hours as Americans reading on our phones about Donald Trump. Now, was that useful? I don't think so. And I think, you know, we need to build defenses against those kinds of things in our technology so that we don't get sucked in like that.
For people for whom their phone really is the way that they are able to be social, the way they're able to make plans, the way they're able to connect with people they haven't talked to in a long time, what are some of the ways that you can keep those connections? And I'm curious if it had any impact in your life. I mean, my best friend doesn't have a cell phone, which is really interesting. In making plans, because you gotta show up.
Special? Does it make her or him more special to you somehow?
It makes you not bail. Because
exactly, and you know, you put your finger exactly at one dimension. One of the rules in the book I say is say no to maybe. Right? Because do you remember, again, Allison, I draw on our shared past, but you remember you used to make a plan with somebody, right, in the morning, and you'd say, I'll see you at the bar at 8, and then you just were at the bar, and they were at the bar at 8. Or do you remember, like, in high school driving around and trying to find the party? Like, you know, just endlessly driving around, but you found the party eventually.
The name of the book is Goodbye Phone, Hello World. On Friday, May 21st, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., Paul Greenberg will have a booth at the Union Square Green Market, doing his in-person event since the pandemic. It's a book signing. McNally Jackson Bookstore will have Goodbye Phone, Hello World on hand, as well as his other pandemic book. We can talk about that another time, called The Climate Diet. That is on Friday, May 21st, from 10 to 1 at the Union Square Green Market. You can meet and talk to Paul. Paul, it was so nice to have you on the show.
So nice to catch up, and I hope to see you again sometime soon.